So last week we were talking about, you know, Santa Claus and, you know, the history of that and the you know, kind of the, you know, how do you go ahead and have grace and mercy and love and all those types of things. Any further thoughts or insights, you know, on that?
No, I'd really have to think about that a little bit. But the whole subject reminds me of a time I spent on St. Nicholas Island off the coast of Turkey.
Huh.
Fascinating place. It's an old ruins of a monastery. It's still very much intact. You go, but you have to get there. I was I chartered a sailboat up there, and we
wow.
went up there. And the guy who owned the boat was an archaeologist.
Oh wow!
And he knew all the history. And you know who provided most of the funds to restore and develop the place?
No,
the Japanese.
The what?
The Japanese.
Really?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
But it was a fabulous place. And they had that old tradition of St. Nicholas, and it's called St. Nicholas Island. And, you know, all of this sort of goes back to way ancient times, and everybody's got their traditions, and yeah, it's hard to correlate everything with facts, but still and all, it was quite a place.
Wow. Wow. I did have a question for you on Ephesians 5:21. I've been searching for the answer for this for over 10 years and have not, I don't know, nobody's been able to seem to be able to give me much on it. So on Ephesians 5:22, it's wives, submit yourself unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. So there's lots of, you know, sermons on that one.
Yeah.
You know, and the husband, head of the wife, and, you know,
yeah.
and all that. But Ephesians 5:21, submit yourselves one to another in the fear of God. I've never heard a sermon on that one. and it's interesting because, I don't know, like my wife, when we're in church or, you know, when, I don't know, when we're in groups, she always kind of tries to keep me from asking questions because, I don't know, the questions, I don't know. Anyways, we were married, you know, in a new church. We just started attending, fairly new. We were fairly new to the church, and we went to a couples class, and they were, you know, going through marriage and stuff like that. And they talked about this verse, and I'm like, you know, I got it, or the wife submitting to your husbands and all that, because, you know, marriage and everything. And I'm like, I look at her, and she's like, no, she's shaking her head. She's like, don't ask. I'm like, but I don't know what that verse before that means. And so I raised my hand, and I asked the teacher, who I think was a pastor, one of the associate pastors or something, and I said, you know, I'm just curious about that passage before. I don't know what that means. And it was coming totally from the heart because I'm like, you know, that passage would seem to say that I'm supposed to submit, you know, at times to my wife and kids and other people. And so I didn't, you know, it's like, when am I supposed to do that as a husband, as a father? And so I asked the question, and the guy went ballistic on me. I mean, in front of like 20 people who are new to the church, he's like, you know, that doesn't negate the next verse, and it doesn't apply to pastors. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, you know, I'm just looking at it from my own heart, my own life, trying to discern when I as a husband need to submit to my wife, when I as a husband need to submit to my kids, when I, as a leader of the home, need to submit to other people. I mean, it seems like it would indicate that, but I don't know how or when to do that.
Well, I think the problem there is in when.
Right.
And the verse is not about when. It's about simultaneously. It says, submit yourself to one another. And that theme runs through Scripture, and you could probably run the word humble and humility and get a lot of verses. But those of us who have served in the Navy, I think, understand it perhaps a little better. In the Navy, on a ship, you can have only one commanding officer. Two is a disaster. And then Scripture says you cannot serve two masters. So you've got one guy who makes the decision. Does that mean that he ponders each problem and comes to a decision and everybody snaps to and does it? No. His decision is based on input from those around him who have better knowledge than he does. So what's he doing there? He's submitting himself to their better knowledge. And he's taking input, and they're submitting themselves to his final decision. And where it breaks down is if he does not submit himself to their better knowledge, specific knowledge of their area of expertise, then he's probably sooner or later going to make decisions that are not in the best interests of everybody on that ship. And because he didn't submit himself to them, in the end, they don't submit themselves to him, or at least not willingly. And I think you've got to look at that in terms of marriage, too, where, you know, a marriage does not benefit, and the marriage partners cannot benefit from taking one course of action and the opposite. You know, it's chaos. So you, where you typically have no submission, what you wind up with is the husband doing his thing and she doing her thing. They cancel each other out at the ballot box and at the bank account. And they wind up with she having to get the budget to buy the things she wants, and he gets the budget, the equal budget, to buy what he wants because she got hers. And eventually you wind up in debt. So really the mutual submission is an admonition that without unity you have no power. Without unity you go down the tubes. So how did the Lord set this up? The Lord works through a authority structures. The Lord, I believe, blesses the idea of one captain on a ship, not two. One husband in a marriage, not two, like we're promoting today.
All right.
And the mutual, when it's working, she's following your lead, and you're making your decisions more for her benefit than yours where there's any conflict. You have submitted yourself. You've submitted your benefits. If there's any division or divergence between you, you've submitted your benefits to hers in the decisions you make. And as you practice that as a husband, she comes to realize that if she submits to your rule or decision, she always seems to wind up the winner.
So that is so awesome.
So it's not, well, what usually happens, we choose out sides, and, well, last time you won the argument, this time I win the argument. That gets nowhere.
So if you think of a horizontal line, and on the left side is an arrow, on the right side is an arrow, and in the middle is a hash mark, and then there's a ball around the hash mark, the left represents the past. The hash mark in the middle is the moment. The circle around the hash mark is the short-term past, short-term future. And the arrow out to the right is the future.
Yeah.
It seems like what I've kind of realized is the four personalities, the analytical, the driver, the expressive, the amiable. The analytical tends to focus in on the past. The driver tends to focus in on the future. The expressive tends to live in the moment, the now. And the amiable tends to focus on short term.
Yeah.
So my personality is a driver analytic. So I am all about the future, you know, like eternity.
Yeah.
Laying up treasures in heaven. It's beyond this world, it's beyond this life. And then very strong, that's predominant where my focus is. And then the secondary focus is the past and what can we learn from the past. Where my weakness would be is living in the moment or the short term. It's like it doesn't even factor in very much at all.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is opposite. Her focus tends to be living in the moment and then the short term. And so balancing, I believe that all of those perspectives have value. They're all, you know, ordained by God. But what looks, feels good in the moment, in most situations seem to be at odds with the future if we spend the money or just in, like, most, like if we spend money in the short term, well, then we give up the ability to leverage the money in the long term. And it's not just money, it's everything. Like in disciplining the kids or whatever, yeah, they can like us in the short term. So it seems like there's peace because you give in, you acquiesce. But in the long term, you're going to pay a big price for that. And so,
well, yeah, logically that's true, but we always have to balance logic, our logic, with God's logic. He says in Isaiah 55, my thoughts are not your thoughts, my thoughts are higher than your thoughts, which simply means that we would say if you spend money now, you won't have it to spend later. And that's true and logical. However, God can overcome that logic.
That's true.
And there are other instances where God can overcome the logic of if you discipline them now, you'll be unpopular, but they'll be better off later. Well, God can overcome that, too. If you discipline them now, maybe they'll come to love you and respect you for that. I've had that experience with my oldest son, who flunked himself out of college 1 year for pure foolishness, and he was down in Atlanta, and he called up in fear and trembling what I was going to say. I said, no, that's wonderful. You're now going to learn more in the next 6 months until you can get yourself back in. He was suspended for a semester. than you've ever learned in a semester before, because you're going to learn how to support yourself. You're not coming home. You're staying down there. Your funds are cut off. And you're going to have to figure out how to be a man. And boy, my wife, and he did. I made one concession. I allowed her to send him care parcels of food. So during that 6 months, he got two jobs that he had to work at to make some money, and he got interested in the one course that he was interested in was real estate. So he got himself his real estate license. And he learned how to survive in the world without a college education.
Nice.
Found that it wasn't desirable, so he was highly motivated. And when he went back to school, it was straight A's from there on out, because he had learned all the things that they should learn in college but don't. And later he said, well, you know, I had a dad who cared enough about me to discipline me, which you don't often hear, but that comes later.
Right.
So. It all boils down to leadership, doesn't it?
You know, it does.
And that launches itself primarily from Genesis 1:28.
Let me look that up.
Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Take dominion over all the beasts and the birds and the fish and so on. That's your leadership, then. God put man with a responsibility to take charge over that which God gave him charge over. And that may be just his own family. It may be his department in the company where he works. It may be a whole company. It may be a lot or a little. But he has a responsibility to be fruitful in that area. Now, the church keeps talking about fruitfulness as leading sinners to the Lord. Well, that's one spiritual dimension of it. But God has undertaken to provide for, I don't know how many billion human beings, animals, etc., that he created and put on the earth. And how do you suppose he does that? Hasn't dropped any manna in quite a few centuries. He does that largely through human beings. And therefore, that leads us to the idea of calling, because you're called to a leadership post. And that may be your family, or it may be just yourself, or when you're a young person, your team that you're playing on, or whatever it is, your classmate. But God calls us to associations where he wants us to take charge and use the influence he gives us to make things better. And that's the fruit. I mean, if God's using you to feed 10 mouths, then you're going to be diligent and exercise your brain and your leadership and see that all gets done, and that involves any job you might have. And as a result of your leadership, I think you earn the right to be heard And that's where people get led to the Lord.
So, Fridays at 2 o'clock Eastern time.
Yeah.
Do you have anything going from 2 to 2:30 on Fridays regularly on your time?
Well, intermittently I do, yes.
Okay. We're starting a brand new Christian Professional Network Mastermind group for a half an hour.
Yeah.
Just inviting, you know, different Christian professionals from around the country to participate. I believe we're going to acquire, I believe, a CPN, Christian Professional Network. There's no charge for people to participate. It's just a gift to, you know, help people. And so I believe that they're working on a 10,000 database of churches to work at getting into the churches and the pastors to help pastors better connect with business people and business people better connect with pastors. And wondered if you would, you know, be interested in sitting in or periodic, whenever you can. It wouldn't have to be every week, but if you'd be interested in sitting in and sharing, you know, some of your thoughts and wisdom.
Well, I could on an occasional basis. You know, are you familiar with Right Now?
I just vaguely.
Yeah, well, they are doing that and doing a what seems to be a grand job on that. Get into their website and see the resources they have.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you familiar with, do you have any association, connection?
Oh, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, we got, C-12 got involved into it. Our leader, Don Barefoot, did, and he put out the thing to us, and I looked at it, and we talked about it. And one of the members of my C-12 group, who's an elder in his large church, they bought into it for their entire church. And he uses it for uses it with his employees. He uses it with members of the church. They have all kinds of resources in terms of films, Bible studies, and so on. But it's all aimed at the one thing is marketplace ministry. And he did it to, he and I have been working in his church quite a bit to get them oriented to, and the pastor there is very much inclined towards businessmen and encouraging them and promoting the ministry through the marketplace. So C-12 got in it to the extent that they bought a membership that allows all of our C-12 members to have free access to all of this thing.
Huh.
So it's been a good resource, and there's some great messages there, really, from amazing people.
Huh.
Get into...
Yeah, I've gone through their stuff because it was introduced a while back, and I went through their website. They have a beautiful website. It seems to be, you know, a great group of people that have a passion, that are very creative.
Are very usable.
Right.
You can anchor something. I mean, for instance, if you wanted to do this by distance like you're doing it.
Yeah.
You could put all of your members into the thing, and then they just tune into this thing on their iPads or whatever they're watching, while they're on the phone with you, and you start out your meeting with a good 2-3-5 minute clip, and then that stimulates the discussion, and you go from there.
Huh.
And you'll have right at your fingertips a lot more wisdom than I've got.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
Well, you take a look at some of that.
But, yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of the whole body,
yeah,
you know, coming together. And so, those resources, I think they're good. I think, you know.
The other thing that I would, I noticed that you're starting this group, and I would give you one thing to ponder.
Yeah.
I did the same thing, not online because that didn't exist at the time, but back in 1990, I think I started this thing for about 9 years. And I was offering this, just as a service to the people, members, the people that came. And the one deficiency that I later saw in the thing is that they had no skin in the game.
Right.
So you've got to try and find a way to get a little skin in the game.
Any ideas how much a month?
Well, see, their participation will probably dictate that.
You make it voluntarily? Voluntary?
No, if it's too low, then they'll miss a meeting and they've wasted X amount of money, which was their dues.
Okay.
And they don't care. And so you raise it a bit and they stop. They miss fewer. And I'll tell you, it works. And, you know, you can even do it. I was at one time was thinking that I was going to sell my C12 group and just keep sort of a quarterly,
right,
group of friends and so on. But I was going to put a financial requirement in there that they contribute X amount a quarter or a year to a charity that we all agree on.
Okay.
So that at least it does two things. It they have skin in the game, and it requires you to provide value.
Right.
And so that works two ways.
Right.
If they got no skin in the game and you've got no way of telling whether there's any value in what you're putting out,
right,
then the thing is hard to sustain over time.
Right.
So, and there are probably many ways to do that, but the principle is worth thinking about.
Absolutely. No, that's...
For the general average attendance at a Sunday school class or anything like that, it's free. And you know, if it's convenient and I feel like it, I go. And if I don't, I
right,
do something else. And the problem is that you get down to nothing ventured, nothing gained. People who don't put anything into a group rarely get anything out, and therefore they eventually drop out.
Right. Ralph, I appreciate it so much. Thank you for sharing.
Okay.
All right, we'll see ya.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you're listening to the rebroadcast of this, feel free to connect with the individual who invited you to participate in today's session, or you can call toll-free, 888-230-2300. That's 888-230-2300. God bless. Have a great day. Bye-bye.